9/11, of course, changed all that. It showed us the power of a very different kind of imagination. It showed us the power of a group of hateful men who spent several years imagining how to kill as many innocent people as they could. At some point, Bin Laden and his gang literally must have looked at one another and said, "Imagine if we actually could hit both towers of the World Trade Center at the exact right spot, between the 94th and 98th floors. And imagine if each tower were to come crashing down like a house of cards." Yes, I am sorry to say, some people had that conversation too. And as a result, the world that was our oyster seemed to close up like a shell. There has never been a time in history when the character of human imagination wasn't important. But writing this book tells me that it has never been more important than now. Because in a flat world, so many of the inputs and tools of collaboration are becoming commodities available to everyone. They are all out there for anyone to grasp. There is one thing, though, that has not and can never be commoditized, and that is imagination. When we lived in a more centralized and more vertically organized world, where states had a near total monopoly of power, individual imagination was a big problem when the leader of a superpower state, a Stalin, a Mao, or a Hitler, became warped. But today, when individuals can easily access all the tools of collaboration and superempower themselves or their small cells, individuals do not need to control a country to threaten large numbers of other people. The small can act very big today and pose a serious danger to world order without the instruments of a state. Therefore, thinking about how we stimulate positive imaginations is of the utmost importance. As Irving Vladowski Berger, the IBM computer scientist, put it to me, we need to think more seriously than ever about how we encourage people to focus on productive outcomes that advance and unite civilization. Peaceful imaginations that seek to minimize alienation and celebrate interdependence rather than self-sufficiency. Inclusion rather than exclusion. Openness, opportunity, and hope rather than limits, suspicion, and grievance. I could not agree more. Indeed, that effort may be the most important thing we learn to do in order to keep this planet in one piece. My own daughter went off to college in the fall of 2004, and my wife and I dropped her off on a warm September day. The sun was shining. Our daughter was full of excitement. But I can honestly say it was one of the saddest days of my life. And it wasn't just the dad and mom dropping their eldest child off at school thing. No, something else bothered me. It was the sense that I was dropping my daughter off into a world that was so much more dangerous than the one she had been born into. I felt like I could still promise my daughter her bedroom back, but I couldn't promise her the world. Not in the carefree way that I had explored it when I was her age. That really bothered me. Still does. The flattening of the world has presented us with new opportunities, new challenges, new partners, but also, alas, new dangers, particularly as Americans. It is imperative that we find the right balance among all of these. It is imperative that we be the best global citizens that we can be, because in a flat world, if you don't visit a bad neighborhood, it might visit you. And it is imperative that while we remain vigilant to the new threats, we do not let them paralyze us. I refuse to settle for a world that gets smaller in the wrong sense, in the sense that there are fewer and fewer places an American can go without a second thought and fewer foreigners feeling comfortable about coming to America. To put it another way, the greatest dangers we Americans face are an excess of protectionism, excessive fears of another 9/11 that prompt us to wall ourselves in search of personal security, and excessive fears of competing in a world of 11/9 that prompts us to wall ourselves off in search of economic security. Either one would be a disaster for us and for the world. Yes, I have said a lot about how economic competition in the flat world will be more intense and involve more players. We Americans will have to work harder, run faster, and become smarter to make sure that more of us are able to connect and compete, collaborate and innovate on the flat world platform, and derive all the benefits it has to offer. But remember, the most important competition is now with yourself, making sure that you are always striving to get the most out of your own imagination and then acting on it. I can't tell any other society or culture what to say to its own children, but I can tell you what I say to my own. The world is being flattened. I didn't start it, and you can't stop it, except at a great cost to human development and your own future. But we can tilt it and shape it for better or for worse. If it is to be for better, not for worse, then you and your generation must not live in fear of either the terrorists or tomorrow, of either Al-Qaeda or Infosys. You can flourish in this flat world, but it does take the right imagination and the right motivation. While your lives have been powerfully shaped by 9/11, the world needs you to be forever the generation of 11/9. The generation of strategic optimists. The generation with more dreams than memories. The generation that wakes up each morning and not only imagines that things can be better, but also acts on that imagination every day.